Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Now, Matt, the obvious conclusion of this segment, I'm going to go ahead and let you just sort of warm up the pipes and decide if you've got a Wookiee, if you got a Wookiee call in you. Here's what I'm going to say leading up to that. You can follow Matt on Twitter at Matt Derrick. You can check out his book, At Last, The Kansas City Chiefs Unforgettable 2019 Championship Season, forward by Kevin Harlan, at triumphbooks.com/Chiefs win. You can read all of his work on chiefsdigest.com, and his Wookiee impression sounds like this.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It wasn't good, but it wasn't fully embarrassing, which also may work as a backup slogan for Almost Entirely Sports in general. Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest, professional Wookiee impersonator and covering all things Chiefs all the time, joins us now here as he's doing every Monday. I don't know, until either you get sick of it, Matt, or until Monday Night Football starts again, I guess?
Either one. I mean, you know.
Maybe we time it off to both happen at the same time. Maybe you have patience till then.
Or until the cease and desist letter from Disney and Lucasfilm.
Matt, listen, I don't want to get too serious here too quickly, but we got just a lot of interesting things out of the Brett Veach press conference this morning, which is not a sentence I really expected to say. Like, we were getting, I was prepared to talk about Hunter Dozier's contract a bunch today and KU beating Baylor this weekend, all that stuff. And I figured, you know what, at the very least, we'll get to talk to Matt a little bit about Mitchell Schwartz's injury news, because that happened, it was Tuesday, Wednesday last week, I think, when Schwartz tweeted it out. It was after we had talked. Then I'll at least have that. And then Brett Veach comes out today and is like, yeah, you know, we're gonna have Schwartz and Fisher both ready to go by training camp, according to Rick Burkholder. Not me, but my paper, which has Rick Burkholder's explanation on it. What were you thinking as all of that was unfolding today?
I was pretty much thinking, I wonder how long it's going to be until Chiefs fans are going to be taking to Twitter talking about Eric Fisher being day-to-day.
I think the answer is 0.2 seconds.
I mean, it wouldn't be unprecedented. I mean, guys have come back from Achilles injuries in that kind of time frame. It's not normal. And, you know, and we don't know. I mean, we don't know the extent of the injury, how severe it was. You know, maybe it wasn't as big of a repair as some others have been. But, you know, I mean, I can't go back any further than, you know, Derek Johnson came back the second time from his Achilles in about 7 months, and you know what? He just wasn't the same after that. So it could be done. I'm just not completely convinced at this point that if it happens that you're going to be seeing Eric Fisher at Pro Bowl level Eric Fisher. I mean, we'll see, but that seems like a pretty ambitious timeline.
That's a good point also that we hadn't, for all of the things that I've seen people be kind of skeptical about and all of the questions that have come from it, the idea that maybe he's back out there more quickly than we expected, but he's not the same version of Eric Fisher that we've seen, I think makes a lot of sense. What about specifically to Mitch Schwartz? I mean, again, we got the news last week from him, just from his Twitter account, saying, hey, you know what, I was going to try to play somewhere in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. It obviously never happened, so we're going to get in there and fix the issue now. Not a long recovery process, according to him. What did you make of that news last week?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly seemed like that if he wanted to do it, I mean, that was going to be, I think, the question all along that some people were speculating about was, you know, hey, just whether or not he wanted to go with the pressure of going ahead and doing the comeback. I mean, there's a lot of work involved in it. And clearly, I mean, I think everything that Schwartz told us that, yeah, he's up for it. And so, yeah, I understood. I mean, absolutely, the reason why they decided to wait, you know, the hope was that, hey, maybe he can come back and make it for the Super Bowl. And at any point along the way, I mean, from October on, the moment that injury occurred, any time that he decided to have the surgery, I mean, it was ending the season. Mm-hmm. So he would not have played in the Super Bowl. You know, I guess I understand, you know, why he maybe wanted to, maybe the Chiefs wanted to wait as long as possible to see if it was going to happen. At that point, I mean, once season's over, I mean, you're probably kind of in a little bit of limbo land. There wasn't any reason for it to be urgent because the recovery timeline for that was pretty much going to wipe out his offseason anyway. Even if he had the surgery the day after the Super Bowl or, the day after the AFC Championship game even, I mean, it was still going to wipe out his offseason program. So it seems to all, to a degree, make some sense. And with Schwartz, I mean, to me, it was always going to be along the lines of, if he wanted to go through with it at this point in his career and at his age. And clearly, he seems pretty gung-ho about it. And if that's the case, I think the Chiefs should be reasonably optimistic.
I'm going to keep just laying down, like, stepping stones, and eventually I'm going to ask for kind of your big picture expectation. But we talked last week about the kind of the ins and outs and what we know about Eric Fisher's contract and the fact that if the Chiefs wanted to, they could move on from Eric Fisher this offseason, free up about $12 million and have $3 million in dead cap money, which was a conversation we had had at some point, or at least that I had had somewhere along the line, with someone, maybe in my dreams, I don't know. So I dream about salary cap stuff at this point. It's really sad. But we had the conversation at some point about, like, well, I mean, really, the Chiefs could move on from Eric Fisher next year and save that money and try to find the new left tackle of the future. Fisher's a little bit older at this point and all that. That was even pre-injury. I mean, pre-injury, there was an argument to be made for taking a long look at Fisher's cap hit in 2021. What changes, if anything, about that now, if you do buy, at least to some extent, that the Chiefs are optimistic about what his recovery timeline looks like?
I mean, to me, it's a calculation about how much of a healthy Eric Fisher do you think you can get this year? I mean, and let's say that the timeline is not as optimistic. Maybe it is they think that, hey, he can be back on a football field by mid-August. But maybe he's not going to be in NFL left tackle form until week five. At this point, with the cap number, are you better off just, waiting to make sure, cross your fingers that maybe you only have to play part of the season without Eric Fisher and that he will be back? Because here's the catch. If you do want to walk away from Eric Fisher, that's a reasonable justification, and you can make the justification from a salary cap standpoint. The catch is that I don't believe that the Chiefs believe, and I don't see any reason to believe, that they have the left tackle solution on the roster right now.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to need a new left tackle. Okay. Well, what's it going to cost you to get a left tackle? To get a left tackle that's a Super Bowl caliber, it's not going to be $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be, bless his heart, signing a journeyman Mike Rimmers. I mean, Mike Rimmers is your guard, and he can pinch in at right tackle. Super Bowl show he can't do it at left tackle, certainly not for a whole season. So you're going to have to pony up, and that's going to cost you. So if you want to shoot for the moon, Trent Williams, hey, maybe, Cam Robinson doesn't get tagged in Jacksonville. There's some guys available, but they're going to cost you just as much as Eric Fisher's going to, if not more.
So, the one guy you didn't mention there is Lucas Niang, and I only kind of circle back on him just because I think his name's going to come up a ton through the next several months in all likelihood, because he's got this very interesting case. If he has some really excellent first-round caliber college tape, but it wasn't his most recent tape because he was playing through an injury his last year at TCU, and then obviously he missed this entire season. I don't know what kind of shape he's in or if he was able to progress as a player in some way over the course of this last year. His rookie contract didn't, no years of that have been used yet, so that's at least kind of a nice perk. But even if you're optimistic about Lucas Niang, This is something else to keep running into as people talk about drafting a lineman or drafting a tackle at 31. The guys that are going to be there at 31 are going to have some questions. I mean, you're not going to draft Trent Williams at 31. You're not even going to probably draft Eric Fisher at 31 in terms of what that guy looks like in his rookie season. So if I make you guess right now who's starting at left tackle for the Chiefs in week one, and then I guess in week eight, if you want to kind of make sure you're playing insurance there for Eric Fisher, would you put your money on Fisher? Would you put your money on a rookie? Would you put your money on Lucas Niang / Mike Rimmers? Would you put your money on a veteran who's not currently on the roster?
I mean, if I were handicapping it, I would be putting my money on a veteran who's not on the roster for week one. I mean, for week eight, I think I'd probably put my money on Eric Fisher.
Wow, interesting.
I mean, I think there's just I don't at this point get a lot of sensors that there's a sense that the Chiefs and Eric Fisher are going to break up. And, you know, and I think even the phrasing and how much attention that Eric Fisher got from Brett Veach today was certainly not the kind of language that you hear from a GM who's expecting to let his left tackle go. I mean, Everything that he said today seemed, unless he's just absolutely completely bluffing us, sounds like a guy who expects Eric Fisher to be playing for his team this year. And I still think it's going to be really, really tough to see him in week one. It's possible. But at the same time, no, I mean, as much as we want to talk about Lucas Niang, this is a guy who hasn't played a game of football in a long time. And you talk about, hey, rookies can come in and plug in at left tackle. It could be done. And, yeah, you know, there are some people who say that Lucas Niang was maybe bottom, you know, round first round talent without the hip injury. But you know what? He had the hip injury.
Right.
It's a guy who's been hurt. It's a guy who hasn't played, you know, and now actually with the hip injury, I mean, it's going to be almost two full seasons since this guy's played on the football field by the time we get to week one. It's going to be a long time. And that year of development away from the game, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a rookie being able to come in and step in and play at left tackle in the NFL. I think it's just really, really tough to be in Lucas Niang's spot and have that expected of you. So, I like I said, I mean, I'm pretty pessimistic that left tackle solution for week one's on the roster. I think it's going to be somebody you're going to have to find. Now, like I said, I mean, I don't think you're going to find that solution at $1.5 or $2 million. I mean, if the solution is out there, if there's a veteran that you can pick up that you think can play there in a pinch, it's going to cost you. And, you know, maybe you don't have to splurge $13 million for Trent Williams, but you know what? You're probably going to have to splurge maybe $6 million for somebody that could be your backup swing tackle. And, you know, that's what the Chiefs were kind of in a mode there when they were paying with Cam Irving.
Yeah,
I mean, they've done it before, so they could do it again.
Yeah, the one, because I mean, all of these various options are gonna have their pros and cons, and so I've just kind of been thinking through them, and the path that you've sort of lined up there, the disadvantage to it is that you are paying three veteran tackles a significant amount of money each. You're not paying whoever this third veteran is. You want to put around the $6 million mark. So it's less than you're paying either Fisher or Mitch Schwartz. But you're paying him something maybe a little bit around what LDT is on the books for right now. He's about $5 million, so probably more than that. You're paying your swing tackle more than most third tackles are making. And that's the con, right? Because all of a sudden you've got a decent amount of money in your edges there, where you also haven't gotten younger. You've got Lucas Niang, but you've got him kind of essentially being your fourth tackle at that point. And if you're going to be doing that, you're not drafting one in the first round. You may not be drafting one in the second round, because now you're talking about your fifth tackle, like whoever that guy would end up being. That would be kind of an odd early draft pick, and so. Let's say that you follow that. The positive there is that if Mitch Schwartz and whoever this veteran are, if they start the first four, five, six games of the year, and then Fisher comes back and they become your third tackle, well, then if Mitch Schwartz has an injury thing pop up again, you would at least not be totally out to sea at that point. And then maybe you do have wherever Lucas Niang is by midseason kind of in the mix, where you could see him stepping in if you really got kind of double whammied once again, which obviously the Chiefs did by the end of the year last year. It's just a lot of money, it's a lot of moving parts, and it's a lot to invest in that position. Not that investing in tackle doesn't make sense, it just sort of seems like it's compounding on compounding on compounding at that point.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, and notwithstanding, you know, maybe the idea that you could rework some contracts and everything, and maybe that will happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Hey, here's a scenario as far as how the roster stacks up right now that it could work, which is, you know, you don't have Austin Ryder signed right now
mm-hmm.
for the future. Really, you know, really the center you have signed on the team right now is Nick Allegretti.
Mm.
You know, you know, could you conceivably move Nick Allegretti to center? Andrew Wiley stays at right. You plug in Lucas Niang at the left side, let him learn. I mean, and LDT obviously fits in there some way or around too, but if Niang, you know, steps in, does what you originally hoped for, which is maybe he plays guard for a year,
yeah,
to get acclimated. You've got Fisher, you know, hopefully he plays at some point in the season. You've got a dependable, I mean, there's a couple of guys out there that could possibly fill that role. Like I said, you know, if, you know, fit in that $6 to $8 million range, yeah, you're overpaying your swing tackle, but you know what? You've got two gimpy tackles as it is coming off surgery.
Yeah.
Probably not a bad idea to overpay for a left tackle to have somebody who can fill in either one of those spots. Now you're in 2022. You know what? Everything goes well. Lucas Niang is ready to move on. You can move him out to a tackle position. If somebody else is hit, you draft, make a draft pick. You know, you get somebody else. Hey, maybe they're able to pick up, or, you know, maybe, you know, Mitchell Schwartz does stick around. You got a lot of options here. So, to me, I mean, I think that might be the best case scenario, is that, you know, Niang wins one of those inside positions. He's able to play. He performs well. Then he's able to kick outside. But you know what? I mean, I think the Chiefs kind of felt it, is, you know, with this year, that they kind of learned that if you lose Eric Fisher, it's going to be hard to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And, you know, if everything had been equal, I mean, if Mitchell Schwartz had never gotten hurt, would he have played left tackle in the Super Bowl? Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have been your best tackle. He would have been your best option. So I don't know. But that, to me, is at least one scenario where it would work. It would cost you some money for that third tackle, but it's probably with, you know, the issues that you have, it's probably a smart investment.
It's just such an interesting, game to have to play, because we're also, I made this point back in the first hour, and I tweeted about it, and I'm going to continue complaining about this, just yelling at people for the rest of the offseason, because the Chiefs fans have taken on so much offensive line based trauma just really in one game, that the entire offseason they could literally bring back Schwartz and Fisher, sign Trent Williams, and Lucas Niang comes back looking straight up like he's built like post serum Captain America, and still those tweets would have 97 responses from Chiefs fans saying, yeah, but they still take a tackle at 31. You can never have enough depth. We're like, listen, the Chiefs, I don't think are going to go into this year saying we're putting 100% of our eggs in the Eric Fisher and Mitch Schwartz basket. And I guess if they are, then all of your shouting Chiefs Twitter is reasonable. You don't have to do it at me, because I get it. I do expect they're probably going to try to get younger at that spot, unless, Matt, you think that maybe that carousel will just be one of the places where the Chiefs just constantly are paying veterans to come in and just set the edge. And I don't know, maybe there's a chance of that as well. That's something they splurge on from here on out. Although eventually, if you're paying Patrick Mahomes as much as you are and you're paying both tackles, you do, I imagine, start to feel that squeeze a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that, you know, Brett Veach kind of got asked this question about, you know, since that, you know, before Niang, that, you know, the highest pick that they had used in the draft on alignment had been Mitch Morse.
Yeah.
And that was, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
So, you know, the Chiefs haven't spent a lot of draft resources on offensive line, but they've spent a lot of cap money,
yep,
on offensive line, because they've paid Eric Fisher, they've paid Mitchell Schwartz. He's been Fisher's been a relative bargain to a degree at left tackle for the last part of his contract. Schwartz, I mean, has been a bargain, but he's been one of the highest-paid right tackles in the league. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif,
yep,
was a very well-paid guard.
Yep.
So, you know, and that's one of the reasons why they had some young guys and, you know, some cheaper guys at some of the other positions, because they were paying those three guys a lot of money.
It's going to be interesting. Let's talk about something other than offensive line. We got a good 20 minutes into that one. But another position group that we've spent some time talking about, that Veach talked about a little bit today, is looking at the receiver position kind of from all angles, looking at both at free agency and in the draft. We talked about Sammy Watkins last week. He talked about Watkins kind of offhandedly today, saying it's going to be, you know, tougher to make that work. I'm not taking much of this as like Brett Veach telling us what the plan is, because that'd be pretty bad general managing, I think. But did you take anything from any of that today? Did you feel like you got any hints about what they're thinking at receiver?
I took that as the first of the opening salvo of public negotiations of letting Sammy Watkins know, hey, Sammy, we want you back, but it's not going to be $8 million per.
Yeah.
you know, they clearly want him back, but it's just going to be at the right price. And I'm sure right now Sammy Watkins wants top value. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's trying to find if someone's going to pay for him. I'm sure he'd love to get that bag. But I think that, yeah, I got the sense that was Brett Veach saying, we want Sammy Watkins back, but it's got to be at the right price. But other than that, I mean, I thought it was notable that, you know, I think that there was certainly some interest expressed in, you know, spending some resources, whether it is draft picks or it's in the free agent market. But I don't know. My spidey sense tingled a little bit because, you know, GMs across the board always bluff. And Brett Veach is a poker player like anybody else. He's going to bluff. And my spidey sense tingled when he said, you know, well, yeah, well, you know, we're not going to come out the gate and sign a big wide receiver to big money in the free agency. I'm like, oh, my God, he's actually going to do that. I mean, it's just like, oh, you know what? The least surprising thing that would happen to me now is if Brett Veach goes out there and signs a receiver, you know, to 4 years, $42 million. I mean, it just seems like a, you know, foregone conclusion now. There's no reason, rhyme or reason to it, but you know, they he clearly knows that they need some depth there. Yeah, because I mean, I think if you're going to the season, no offense to those guys, but you know, if Hill, you know, Hardman, and Pringle are your top three receivers, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah,
but you know, it's not that those guys aren't talented, but it's just not as deep as Patrick Mahomes has been used to working with.
I think we may have already literally made this comparison, but it just really startled me because I was back looking at the list of free agent pending wide receivers in this year's class, and you know, Marvin Jones is a name that's come up a few times, and I'm just been kind of just scrolling down the list, and I saw Marvin Jones nearly 1,000 yards last year, and I saw on SpotTrack he shows he's 31 years old. I was like, that's older than I would have guessed. Like, he's 2 years younger than A.J. Green. That math doesn't work out, which also makes him 3 years younger than Sammy Watkins. Actually, 3 years older than Sammy Watkins. I butchered that. Marvin Jones is 3 years older than Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
I would have gotten that one very. Now, that's because I think because we've been microscopically close to Sammy Watkins now for a number of years, and Marvin Jones basically plays on Jupiter because he's a lion. But, like, there's a lot of talk about how green the grass over there is on a lot of these guys. I can't help but wonder if Sammy Watkins is going to look at this receiver market, do some math on the offers he's gotten, and then they're going to kiss and make up. Because I don't know where makes more sense for Sammy Watkins at this point, unless he just gets a great deal for, like Detroit, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, and we're talking about Byron Pringle, and you're talking about age. Byron Pringle's 1 year younger than Sammy Watkins.
Impossible. That's simply not true. You are incorrect. I'm sorry to tell you, you're simply wrong.
I mean, it helps.
What?
Sammy came into the league like he was 21, and
right?
Pringle came into the league when he was 25. So that helps, but yeah.
It's simply impossible. That cannot be true.
Math.
I'm pulling up both their football reference pages to try to figure out exactly how many days apart they are, because it's just not, there's just no chance. Byron Pringle was born November 17th, 1993. He's older than I am!
Oh, that's frightening.
Sammy Watkins was born June 14th, 1993. They were born in the same year!
Oh, I didn't think they were that close. I thought it was like a full year. No, that's just a few months.
Sammy Watkins is 156 days older than Byron Pringle.
Wow.
Wow. And let's see. Byron Pringle was born before you were.
Yeah.
And Byron Pringle was born when I was a junior in college. I just realized I could be your father. I mean, my social life would have had to have gone much, much better.
Dad? Whenever I heard the Wookiee call, I thought maybe, but no, it can't. It simply can't be.
And we've got it down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah, we certainly have. Wow. Okay. Well, that's Listen, you could tell me right now that you are actually my father, and I would not be more surprised than I am to find out that Byron Pringle is 6 months essentially younger than Sammy Watkins. That would not be more surprising to me. Anything else stand out to you from Veach's presser today? He had a little mention of, you know, some places that he thinks the draft's got some pockets and some off-season stuff. I don't know what you took to be fully truthful, what you may have taken to just be him answering questions, but did anything hop out to you?
The one that jumped out to me, I mean, obviously he talked about holes in the, you know, where they need to build and, you know, what maybe some holes in the draft are, you know, where the depth is. But talk about getting a, you know, backup for Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
This is the time that they need to do it. I mean, nothing wrong with Travis, but, you know, he's getting up there in age. And I keep saying it, you're just playing with fire, not having a reliable backup behind him. And, you know, there's been some indications that the Chiefs are kicking tires on some tight ends in the draft. Right now, I would be betting pretty high that I think the Chiefs are going to go tight end fairly early in this draft.
That's a sign of me rubbing my hands together in anticipation. Because here's the thing. I heard him say that today, and my first thought was not, ooh, it's happening. My first thought was, we've heard this before. And we'll talk ourselves into Ricky Seals-Jones or whatever, but we've had really both of these last two off seasons, not the one we're currently in, but the two previous ones, I distinctly remember having long conversations about the Chiefs' number two tight end and how that was one of the roster spots that really was pretty weak. And then I distinctly remember getting to the end of those two seasons and going, man, it was really stupid of us to spend that much time talking about who the Chiefs' number two tight end would be, because it just, they didn't run very many two tight end sets, at least last, I think this last season they ran significantly fewer than they had the year prior. I might be wrong on that, but you get a couple targets here and there to Nick Kizer. Ricky Seals-Jones kind of just sputters right out, and Travis Kelce has the best season in football history for a tight end, arguably. But you're buying it this time. This time you think those rumblings, those hashtag rumblings, are legitimate?
I mean, I think part of the reason why Travis Kelce had a fantastic year this year, certainly a piece of it is that he's a really good player, mm-hmm. really good offense, but part of it is that there was nobody else to catch the ball at that position.
Yeah.
I mean, he just caught all the passes. I mean, it wasn't like the Chiefs threw the ball to the tight end any more than, you know, Andy Reid normally does. It's just that none of the other guys could catch the ball.
Yeah.
So he just got all the snaps and got all the catches. I don't think that at this age, I don't think that they really want Travis Kelce to have to play every single snap.
Yeah.
I mean, it leads to mistakes. It makes you tired. I mean, I think you saw that a couple of times. I mean, as good as Kelce has been, I think he would tell you that there were some games where maybe he pressed a little bit and maybe made some mistakes, and maybe those were fatigue mistakes because he was asked to play a lot of snaps at his age. And historically, Andy Reid's been a two tight end guy. I mean,
yeah.
He loves to play multiple tight ends. And this year, he played less multiple tight end sets than he has at any point really in his coaching career.
Yeah.
And I think that's just speaks to the fact that they didn't have a number two tight end that they trusted. Because even Demetrius Harris, for all the critics, and bless the heart of Nick Kizer and Deion Yelder, but Demetrius Harris looked like, you know, second coming of Tony Gonzalez compared to what they got from the other guys this year.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So you expect, I think this is clearly what you're getting at, but you expect that whenever they do find that guy, it's going to be someone that is in, not that this is an easy mold to find someone in, but in more or less the Travis Kelce mold / style of playing tight end in terms of being a guy who you want to develop into a dominant receiving threat. And then the goal there is that he takes a little bit off of Kelce's plate, and then it's a little more next year and a little more the year after that. And then eventually you've got kind of your two tight ends set really fully running, where you've got two unguardable aliens, both of that position at the same time.
I mean, I think that would be absolutely ideal. And some of it is that the Chiefs have, to their credit, to a degree, they've tried to kind of find the number two tight end, but a lot of the resources that they've put into it have been some of this 4D chess, trying to find a Trey Burton chess piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Blake Max of the world and the John What's-His-Face from Princeton that I keep blanking on his last name.
Love it.
And John Lovett, thank you.
Rudy's sitting right here and everything. You may as well have said something rude about his mother.
I don't know who you're talking about.
You know, they keep trying to find this, you know, this hybrid H-back guy rather than just saying, you know what, maybe we just need to go out and get a really stud tight end that can back up Travis Kelce. Yeah, I mean, I think that was, you know, and obviously, you know, Travis Kelce shows you you can find valuable tight ends in the middle round. So yeah. It's not like they need to go out and spend a first or a second round pick. But, you know, and it certainly seems to me, at least at this point, that they are kicking the tires on draft tight ends more so than they have in the last few seasons.
I would enjoy that very much. That would make me very happy. It wouldn't make me quite as happy as it would if they took a running back every single round of the draft for the rest of my natural life, but it'd make me pretty happy. And so I guess I'll take that as our optimistic note to dismount on. Matt, always lovely to talk to you. Thank you for your various, you know, I'm just going to say sort of fatherly insights. You know, it keeps it open that way. Father, you know, whatever the truth ends up being, we'll figure that out in the years to come.
Maybe I am the father of both you and Byron Pringle. We'll have to find out.
That would be even more surprising. Thank you, Matt.
Take care, guys.
Matt Derrick, and we've called him Reverend Matt Derrick. Maybe it's really Father Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. Follow him on Twitter, at Matt Derrick. Check out at last triumphbooks.com. You can go to his Twitter account for all the links to all sorts of things, everything at Chiefs Digest. He wrote about the presser today from Brett Veach. We'll talk more about Veach's presser. Also, maybe talk about some of the things that that Matt mentioned just then whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You know, no, I'm not Travis Kelce. God, I wish I was, though.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
During the break, I was seeing if Rudy had seen the pictures that I had retweeted. Beards, you may or may not have. The effect wouldn't have been the same. But my dad tweeted out some pictures that my little sister has taken. She got a camera for Christmas. I came through because I'm a good brother. Tripod. Book about taking pictures of animals. Camera bag. Rechargeable batteries. That's where nice. I came through. And I'm also hoping that at some point, you know, she just becomes incredibly famous for her wonderful photography, and then she can fund my, at that point, petering out radio career. That will have I'll have peaked with the Chiefs like last year, and it's just a steady decline from that point on, unless we both, I don't know, improve at tight end. I don't know what that means. It just seems like it could be a joke. It's like if an AI would have written a joke to end that sentence for me, but yeah. It wasn't really funny. But, you know, those are my sort of financial investments in Chloe's photography. I've retweeted them now. But the first picture is a picture of a snake that is just somewhere there in Florida. I don't know. Chloe just catches lizards and snakes and bugs and dolphins and fish. And
she's
just
the reptile queen.
And I think that if she was here, she would politely correct you that it's more than just reptiles.
Fair.
And then I think it's herpetology. I gotta find out. I don't know.
Yeah, that's correct.
Is it correct?
Yes.
What does it mean? That's definitely a word. Do you know what it means, Beards, or you just knew that it was a thing?
I think it's study of reptiles.
It is the branch of zoology concerned with reptiles and amphibians.
I didn't know that that's... All right, well, listen. She's probably not listening, so nobody tell her that I didn't know what that meant, okay? I thought it was... I knew it was some sort of study of some sort. Anyway, the reason this became show relevant is because I found out that if you just show Rudy a picture of a snake taken from up close, he gets the heebie-jeebies.
I don't like snakes or spiders. It's not my thing.
Have we talked about this before?
Yeah, I mean,
Is there like a casual fear that you... I'm not like trying to hold every snake and tarantula and whatnot, but I'm not... The idea of it doesn't skeeve me out.
No, thank you.
Yeah,
definitely,
it does for me, and it's very simple for me. When I was a kid, just at way too young of age, I watched Arachnophobia, and that's what did the spiders.
Sure.
And snakes just might have been... I'm trying to remember if, like... I don't think Anaconda necessarily made me, like, afraid of snakes, but I'm sure it played a part. I think I've just always kind of been a little, like, to snakes.
Sure.
And that might be just because, like, where I grew up in the country, like, there was a good chance every snake you came across was a copperhead, which is very poisonous.
Sure.
And, like, I've just seen, like, you know, like, 6 foot, 7 foot long black snakes. And while black snakes aren't necessarily, like, they're not deadly or anything, you just see, like, a 6 foot snake. Oh, well, you know, it's just a little heebie-jeebie. Spiders, though, 100% was arachnophobia. That movie, I watched it when I was, like, six. My sister loved scary movies growing up. I hated them. I love them now. But my sister, who was, like, also younger than me, she was probably five at the time. I was probably 7 or 8. She was probably 6 or 7. She would make me watch scary movies. And I know you're wondering, why is your younger sister making you watch scary movies?
That's what I was wondering.
She was in charge. I was terrified of her. And so, like, I watched about half of Arachnophobia.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, nope, peace, I'm out. Went to my parents' room and attempted to sleep. But the reality was I was up all night just thinking of spiders.
That you went to your parents' room and then they just had a whole big thing of plastic spiders that they kept just throwing at you, so, and you had to pick your poison.
Ugh. Hate spiders.
Beard, you also, you seemed very
get out of here with spiders.
Unnerved.
Now, so here's the thing. They reach a certain size.
I was
where
gonna
then I'm like out of here on spiders. Anything below, like where you can very visibly see how long and how many of their legs are, I'm fine. I wage war on those things with a vengeance.
So you need them to be larger than a certain size.
Yes. Otherwise, I'm so like, fine, whatever. See, I'll kill it. I'm done with it, whatever. If it gets to a certain point, and then especially if there's hair, at that point, I mean, then I just like try and get a golf club or something, and then from very far away try and hit it.
Okay, so then yeah, you turn see, into actually, I just had a thought, is, actually bleep this where you
is
end
the,
up.
A point, though.
This is the difference.
Like, I'll let Rudy talk about your story.
It does not matter what size spider does. It like just doesn't matter. If I see a spider, in my head, this spider is poisonous and it wants to murder me. And now the rest of my life is devoted to murdering the spider.
Okay, but it doesn't.
I will literally
spend
hours just trying to like moving around couches, just trying to find a spider.
Really?
Because like I have to kill the spider.
My whatever.
Does not matter
I was,
the size.
I don't know. I don't
They're
know.
All murderous. They all want to kill me. But I'll kill them first.
I don't know how long, how
killer be kilt world out there.
I would say I was probably maybe I'm gonna just throw a dart at like maybe 12 to 14 years old, and my mom got a spider bite like on her belly.
Oh, that's good.
And it was bad. It was bad. It was gross. There was all sorts. I don't remember like super. I just remember it was not a good time for her or for any of us to be around her while she had a spider bite. Like, it's just a general unpleasantness all the way down. But I don't see if, like, I would rather have my living space just be only organisms that I want to be living there, you know? Like, in my old apartment, it was, like, bottom level, and there was, like, this very cool kind of wooded area out back. But also, it meant spring showed up and the bugs were moving in, baby. And so I had a bunch of like glue traps and stuff. Just
I had some fun bugs in the basement.
I'm not, you could say, bugged by them that much, but I don't necessarily want them. I don't want to lay my head down to sleep at night and then just be staring at like a little pile of beetles that are just sort of hanging out there.
No thanks.
Playing their famous music. Terrible. I lay down to sleep and it's just no. That was the main issue, is that I just wanted them to shut up.
Yeah,
it was just too loud.
Very loud.
It was just really distracting as I was trying to sleep.
Just these kids and their rock and roll music.
Yeah. And there were four of them, and I named them Beetle 1, Beetle 2, Beetle 3, and Beetle 4. Now I'm realizing what a huge missed opportunity. Could have named. Never mind.
I thought you were going to say Beetle 1, Beetle 2, Beetle 3, and like Ringo.
That's what it should have been. That was funnier. Let's Beard, can you edit this for the podcast? I'll just give you a clean for the podcast feed.
No.
Yeah, I had four Beetles that would just be, you know, laying on my pillow at any given time. It was just, they were just too loud. But, you know, I did name those four Beetles. They were named Beetle 1, Beetle 2, Beetle 3, and then Ringo Starr.
That was a good joke.
Thanks, Beards.
So, like,
I really quick, there's a Twitch comment from Bartman KC that said, I love this show. I really can't express how happy I am that you stream it so I can listen from Florida. First, Bartman, thank you. for saying that. It makes me very happy. And then secondly, look out for both wild animals and my sister, who may be coming at you just flinging wild animals. But I very much appreciate that.
He also says, though, also later, Rudy is honest, spiders must die or the ability must be burnt to the ground. I agree.
That's totally fine. Also from Twitch, someone said, same but in Illinois. I hate Illinois. Please send help. Their Twitch username is the Disco Spider 5. So that implying the existence of at least four more disco spiders.
Oh, no.
Hugely important.
Is that like that internet video where they're giving spiders all these different drugs or whatever? And there's like the crack cocaine spider.
Oh, is that what the...
Yeah, that's not the disco spider.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's not really cocaine, is it, in that video? Or is it actually? I thought it was a joke.
It is a joke.
Were they actually giving drugs to spiders? Because there definitely have been like experiments where it's like, here's the web this spider made on this various drug or whatever. I don't know.
It was like that, but it was a parody of that.
Okay. I remember seeing a meme at some point in pretty early internet of that spider that was just covering itself in white powder, and it just said like, "I bleeping love cocaine," and it made me laugh when I was 13.
I'll find this and I'll send it to you on Twitter.
That's fine. It's like I believe you also.
It's also funny, and you should watch it.
So thanks to everybody who has expressed their enjoyment of being able to watch this show and listen to this show from out of state. It's very exciting. Did you have another story, Beards?
Yes.
A bug or snake based story?
So like 2 weeks ago, I found this Reddit a while ago. It's called Make Me Suffer. There's funny stuff on there occasionally, but. There was one that was a video.
I don't go to that subreddit, Beards. You know why?
Why?
I work with you.
Mm. Anyway, there was a video I clicked, and it was
because working with you is suffering.
It was this guy that was cutting a mask. Yeah, I got the joke.
Okay, cool. You're on a subreddit called I'm Beards, and this is my existence.
Yes.
Okay.
He was cutting what looked like one of those kind of surgical masks, just you know the blue and white ones.
Cutting
the edge of it off.
Okay.
So, and then he opened it up, and there was like a silica pack or whatever in there for whatever reason.
Okay.
And then it showed somebody else doing it and cutting it, and then opens it up, and then it cuts straight to the camera, to which there's a big old spider in there scurrying out straight towards the camera.
Uh-huh.
And boy, let me tell you, my phone went about 10 feet in the air, and I went the other direction.
It can't get you through the phone, Beards.
Oh, I did. Oh, my brain didn't process that at the time.
All right.
I think I turned my phone over and just left it there on the couch for like another 20 minutes just to make sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it makes sure it got squished.
Yeah.
If it was in there trying to come out, if you have the phone upside down, it can't use your phone as a portal.
Boy, I suffered.
Yeah. I mean, the Reddit did its job, I guess. Why are you on that subreddit?
There's some funny stuff occasionally.
I mean, it gave us, by all means, keep going to that subreddit.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
I'll stay away from a Reddit page
of people suffering.
Yeah,
I just like look out my window and I just see a world suffering.
I especially on the internet, I don't need to work hard. Like, do you use your Twitter account? Just scroll through your Twitter account. You won't find spiders. You'll find plenty of suffering.
But sometimes it's funny stuff on Reddit. And I don't need all the real suffering.
Like, if somebody, and this is going to have to happen relatively soon, I don't know if we can get, like, maybe we get, like, a little show cross-sponsorship with, like, a pet store or something. But if like, a pet store brought in a...
Nope.
Some non-venomous snakes and, like, a tarantula or whatever.
Snakes are fine. Tarantula, no thank you.
I would definitely, like, hold
You're
going
to have to get a
them.
Replacement board up that day.
Listen, Beards, if getting a replacement board up was that easy... would have been done by now. I don't think I'm that unnerved by snakes. What is it about snakes and spiders that may, I don't know. I don't understand why it's...
The way they move.
I just don't like them.
But Beards, you're fine with snakes, though.
Snakes are fine. Like, I don't want to be, you know, cuddling a snake or whatever, but like...
Coward.
Yeah, you know,
I
go to the zoo or whatever, I like looking at
arms.
Snakes. They're cool. They're fun looking. If there's a tarantula or a spider exhibit, I'm out of there. Uh-uh. Scorpions, too. No, thank you.
Does it get, so Rudy, on the snake scale, does it change, like, are you more or less afraid of larger or smaller snakes? Like, is it just bigger is scary or just a straight one-to-one?
I mean, like, I've had a boa constrictor around, like, my shoulders before.
What about a python?
Or was it a python or was it a boa? It's not albino one snake, though. I know that.
But regardless, let's say that all of a sudden
snake. It was a mad, like, this snake was, this snake could eat me.
Let's say all of a sudden there were two.
I mean, John Cleese is like 6'5".
Let's just say it's okay, Breeds. I'm gonna get to my joke now. We're gonna.
I don't understand that joke.
That's
all
right.
Monty Python.
Beard. Okay, that's
never
fine.
Never seen it.
But Rudy, let's say that I had a connection to a local pet shop or something.
Yeah, I'd say no.
And they brought in two massive pythons into the studio. You would. What would you leave? If there were two massive pythons out open in the studio.
Like,
loose.
They're just loose. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I am calmly getting up. I'm walking to the. Sorry, I just saw Twitter.
This is Conrad's working very quickly tonight. Conrad
would
work is working very quickly
walk
tonight.
To the balcony.
Yeah,
and I would jump to the tree.
All right,
which I could clearly do.
So two pythons loose in the studio would make you go jump off the balcony.
Here's the thing: if this room was full of snakes and spiders. I guarantee you, I can get to that tree.
You'd make the jump, but
you
two,
can make the argument that any other time I wouldn't, but that day, oh boy.
Listen, all I can say is that if two loose pythons would make you leap out of the studio at a moment's notice, it's really important that I keep this jacket on. God, I worked so hard for that joke.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You know they're probably not going to talk about on ESPN? On ESPN Radio that gets potted up here in a little bit? Too many spider boys.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That liner has stayed weirdly prophetic now for like nearly probably 4 or 5 years.
Not scared of spider boys. Just spiders.
What's the new Tom Holland Spider-Man called?
Spider-Boy Gone Home.
It's Gone Home?
I think it's Can't Go Home.
I thought it was No Way.
No Way Home.
Spider-Man 3, Home
Lock
Alone
home.
2.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man 3, Home Alone 3.
No Spider-Boys at home.
Do you know what I watched this weekend, what Renee and I watched this weekend? I'm going to save the review for a Shot Clock review, but it's sort of been banned. What?
Man Spider.
Nope. What did you say, Rudy?
Man of Spider.
Neither of those. Close, though. Finally watched the first Ant-Man.
I did that like three weeks ago.
I just hadn't seen it yet.
Same.
I'm not going to tell you what I thought about it because it's going to be a Shot Clock review. I never remember to do Shot Clock reviews like 6 months from now. We'll completely shift gears to baseball next.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.